I'm Humphrey Hawksley, and thank you for joining the Magazine Show podcast brought to you by Golster, the experts in health and well-being, with a range of fascinating guests who stimulate, educate, and make us laugh. Hello and welcome. This is the Golster Magazine Show. I'm Humphrey Hawksley, your host for the next hour, where we're going to delve into history. We're going to make comparisons to our modern day, and all of it from across the Atlantic in the United States, whose new president is very much in the news at the moment. Was there an 18th century equivalent to Donald Trump or that tech wizard Elon Musk? If you've got a guess, put it in the chat. And to find out, we're going to look at a stunning new novel, Going Dark, which draws much of this together in a really gripping drama. My guest today is the author. He's in the world of technology and software that drives all our lives. He's also what they call an angel investor, keeping vigil for the next brilliant idea so that he and others can make fortunes. Welcome, George Mihok, to the Golster Magazine Show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Where are you exactly, George?
I'm in Cleveland, Ohio, which is in the Eastern time zone, and it's north on the shores of the Great Lakes, specifically Lake Erie.
Lake Erie, the Great Lakes, are they the lakes that border Canada, or is that further down, the Great Lakes?
Canada, actually, the Great Lakes border Canada, and the ownership of the Great Lakes cuts straight through the lake itself, and they're the largest fresh water bodies of water in the world.
Are they really?
Yes,
good,
yes.
Good gracious.
I think the percentage is something like 70% of fresh water is in those five lakes.
Good grief. Well, I never knew that. I hope that you tell us a lot more that we don't know. And if anybody wants to know anything, put it in the chat. The Golster rule is that our guest will try to answer even if they haven't got the faintest idea of what we're talking about. I want to ground our conversation in the novel, actually, Going Dark. It's the title of your book. It has two bits of in there, one historical and one present. But what does Going Dark mean? Is that a power cut?
Going Dark has multiple meanings. Absolutely, it's the lights out, right? So Going Dark, but it's also a technical term. When a programmer doesn't submit their latest code or module to the library, it's said that programmer has gone dark, that they're not submitting their work, so they're no longer present. And also it's a concept that dropping off the grid and being anonymous is another analogy for going dark. So you have three main concepts. One is just the practical, the lights go out, the power grid is down. The second is a technology programmer is not available. And the third, and the hero in the book, Paul Knox, has to go dark. He has to drop off the grid.
Oh, but just one of the things you said there piqued my curiosity. You said hasn't put anything into the libraries. Is there a sort of global library of software?
There is. There's multiple, but there's something called GitHub, G-I-T-H-U-B, that is a library of programs that programmers throughout the world deposit their source code into and retrieve it, and it keeps versioning, and it's protected and secured, so corporations use it, individuals use it. Yes, it's absolutely a thing.
I'm not going to get tangential on this, but I have to ask you this. So you put your source code or your program into it, but then can other people steal it?
It's like anything else that's digital. If you don't protect it with a password, absolutely, they can steal it. Or in a lot of cases, it's called open source. Programmers deposit it into the library to allow others to use, just like a traditional library. And they can improve it. So it's a community of developers that improve software called open source. And that's also stored in GitHub.
Okay, but Google and Facebook and those things, they would protect their stuff so that people didn't.
In some cases, they do. But in most cases nowadays, and this is a trend that's been happening over the last 20 years, it's known that a community of developers can make a product, a software product, better versus a closed piece of software only updated by a select few.
Oh, okay. Okay. So there's a sort of definite sort of community there that, okay, right. I'm going to park that idea, but if anybody's got any questions about that, please let us know. We've just talked about that what's happening now, but Going Dark, show us, you've got a copy of Going Dark there. Just show it to us so that people know what we're talking about. This is the copy of it. And tell us, that is a coin that you've got.
As you said, Humphrey, the book is a dual timeline story. So that means there's a historical aspect. It's historical fiction. It starts in 1781, specifically June, during the American Revolutionary War. And then the present day, it fast forwards to today, and it's initiated the story by a cyber terrorist attack and a traditional attack, where terrorists have been lying dormant since 9/11. The coin, which is a 1773 gold King George III guinea, links the two stories together.
Okay. Before I ask you how that's linked together, the Revolutionary War, that's the War of Independence against the British. Just encapsulate that for us. What was happening?
Sure. So the war started in 1775, 1776. The story takes place in 1781. It's the tail end. It's 3 months before the Battle of Yorktown, which was the final battle in the Revolutionary War. So 6 months. So it was at the very end of the war, and Jack Jewett, who is a militia captain in 1781, rode from Richmond, Virginia, 40 miles to warn Thomas Jefferson, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, and then the governor of Virginia and one of the founding fathers, to warn him that Lord Cornwallis and his troops were marching to capture him and the Virginia Assembly and potentially change the tide of the war. So Jack rode through the night, 40 miles, not on the main road because he didn't want to get captured, through the woods and warned Thomas Jefferson. And that's how the story starts. And then Thomas Jefferson says, no, the British wouldn't come all the way out here in the mountains of Virginia to get me. And Jack had to convince him. And that's a true story. Based on a true story. And then Thomas Jefferson asked Jack to take a secret package 400 miles north to someone named George Washington, the future first president of the United States. So that's the historic journey of Jack through starting in Virginia and during the Revolutionary War.
And Jack was dark. He had gone dark in order to get through on his secret missions, had he?
He had to carry a secret package and avoid the enemy. And that secret package was also secretly encoded to ensure that if the enemy did capture Jack and the package, they could not interpret the actual message within it.
So just let's go really to basics here. What technology did they have in those days? They were on horseback. Did they have, what did they have technology-wise that parallels the stories up? Or what was the equivalent to what we're talking about now?
Sure, that's a really good question, and that It parallels with my background, my technology background. And during war, you have spies, and the spies are gathering intelligence, and they're also tasked with protecting information, secret information, from the enemy. And one way to do that is through encryption or coding, encoding of documents, text, information, so that the enemy can't read it or access it and learn about troop movements, etc. So back in the day in 1781, George Washington and his spies used a sophisticated encryption or coding mechanism called the Culper Code. Well, and in the book, in my story, the Culper Code is used by Thomas Jefferson to encode a secret message that must get to George Washington. So that encryption, if you then fast forward to today, is used in communications from email to bank transactions to cryptocurrency. It's a modern day version of what George Washington and others used, and the British used, encryption and encoding to ensure that communications remained secret and safe.
And how was that done? Was it changing letters in words around, or how would you write?
Absolutely.
Going dark in an encryption code.
Sure. So it would, you would, first of all, the sender and the recipient both have to have what's called the key. How to encrypt, which means write it in a way that it can be deciphered by the recipient. And it's a code. So it could, for example, be the letter F. The encryption code would say advance three letters from F. So it's H-I-J. J would be the actual letter for F. And so that's used today. There's a very sophisticated algorithm for encryption of email and so forth. Very, very sophisticated.
But a similar system.
Similar.
Letters are transposed and changed. And
that's right. And I'm going to deviate just for 1 minute, because there's something happening that you might have read about. But if you've heard of a supercomputer, the newest version can now decrypt the most sophisticated encryption. So there's a concern that the latest supercomputer could render all communications unencrypted or public. So there's a race to decrypt our encryption, or solve our encryption methodology. So it's a big concern.
But I have to ask this, because it's all over. Who owns this computer? The Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, the Americans?
It's an arms race to the fastest.
Oh, to get that computer. And do you put your coding or program into this library that we talked about? Everybody has it or not?
No, not yet. No.
So that stays outside of the library, does it?
That's right. It's that computer is so advanced. And it takes so much energy and power, it can't be used by normal systems.
Now, I want to go back to the cover of the book. Please. You had a coin on there, yeah. And you said that coin had got a parallel in your modern story. Tell us briefly what the modern story parallel is and how that coin links them.
Sure. I just have to go back brief to 1781. I mentioned Jack Jewett. Jack becomes the first in a group of clandestine secret warriors called the Liberty Unit. They're a group of guardsmen that protect George Washington. That group lives throughout history. It's past the Jack and his children, his son, becomes the next iteration of the Liberty Unit and a guardsman, and so forth all throughout history until modern day. Paul Knox is a Liberty Unit member, okay? So it's hereditary, and the father, Jack, passes the coin down from one generation to the next. So in the book, in the modern day, Paul, who is the protagonist, who's the hero in the book, receives the coin from his father. His father says, I'm giving this coin to you, not because you're my son, but because you've earned the right to become a guardsman in the Liberty Unit. So it's passed down generation to generation.
And the threat or the challenge in the Liberty Unit in the 18th century was the British and getting the British out. What is the, in the 21st century, I presume, what is the challenge to the Liberty Unit then?
Sure. So in the modern day, there are a group of terrorists that have infiltrated the southern border of the United States, and they were dormant for 20 years. It's Osama bin Laden's second phase of his quest to bring down Western society. Okay. And Paul uncovers this threat, and the Liberty Unit is activated to stop the ISIS terrorists from bringing America into into chaos, or going dark, per se.
Going dark. So they were going to infest the computers, put viruses, computer virus everywhere, or bomb it?
That's a great question. Yes, they were master hackers. So in the ISIS, a rogue unit of the terrorists created a cyber attack unit in the United States, and they used ransomware and malware to infect computers and hold just the common day people and corporations and hospitals hostage. And they funded their operations through ransomware, which is happening today. You know, some of yours, I'm sure, have had ransomware attacks. Yeah. Where your computer gets locked up and you have to pay in cryptocurrency in order to get your computer unlocked.
And you just mentioned a word there that I wanted, because before we started the show, you were holding two things up. You were holding the coin, which goes from generation to generation, but you were also holding, and I've never seen this before, some cryptocurrency. I thought it was crypto, but you've actually got some.
Yeah, so this is a crypto wallet.
Yeah.
So obviously a coin, and let me show you also the actual 1773 coin. So this is the gold guinea.
Okay, that's it. Yeah, we can see that.
This is the
King George III
gold guinea, 1773.
Yeah.
So it's 200 and some years old, authentic coin. When you think of cryptocurrency or Bitcoin, you think of something that's physical. Mm. Cryptocurrency and Bitcoin are simply digital ones and zeros. And they're stored in a unique way where others cannot get access to it unless they have that private key. And it's anonymous, it has monetary value. You can then copy it from or transport it from a computer, from the internet, to what's called a crypto wallet. And you have to have, if it's disconnected from the computer, no one can get access to your Bitcoin, your Ethereum, or whatever cryptocurrency you use. And it's safe and it's anonymous. So, however, the risk is if you lose the password and you have thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars on this wallet, it can never be accessed. It cannot be accessed by anyone.
Including yourself.
Including myself. It's locked. So if you forget the password, it's lost. So
Wasn't there somebody I read who threw, must have been that away by mistake? And it was worth
millions of dollars because they lost the password. I can't get into it. It's worthless.
But now to you, this is an obvious question, but who runs this cryptocurrency thing? Because there's lots of them around, aren't there?
There are many cryptocurrency coins, as they call it. Bitcoin is the most popular. Ethereum is another coin. It is a decentralized monetary currency. There is no one person that owns it or controls it. There's no federal bank. And that is why it's become popular and a way to exchange value without having a governing body regulating it or monitoring what you're purchasing, like a credit card. A credit card, obviously the government and the corporations can understand exactly what you're purchasing, when, by whom, from whom. With cryptocurrency, it is anonymous.
But how could you trust it? I mean, you know, I haven't bought any. How much have you got on that disc?
A few hundred dollars on this.
Few hundred. Have they gone up or down since you bought them, or you don't know?
It's at an all-time high right now. So it's gone from one Bitcoin was roughly, this is an estimate, so it's not going to be, roughly $2,000 about 8 years ago. It's now over $60,000. So one coin bought about 8 years ago for roughly $2,000 is now worth roughly $60,000.
And your $200 or $300 that you've got on there, if you plug that into your computer, you can sell it, can you?
Yes, you can in effect trade for it. So you could trade it for another form of currency, whether it be another type of Bitcoin, US dollars or pounds.
Okay.
So you trade it for another something that is of value.
So think
of it just like gold. Gold, it fluctuates with demand in the economy. The same happens with, and it's on the exchanges, different types of cryptocurrencies.
And nobody actually writes the program that creates the currency?
That's interesting. You tie it all together. Absolutely. The community writes it. It's open source software stored in something like GitHub.
It goes to the library.
The library is managed by the community of developers.
Okay. And has any of the cryptocurrencies been, been found to be a scam or become flawed or breached?
That's a complex question. It's obviously humans that create it, that manage it, that trade it. So when you say fraud, it can be used for criminal purposes and is proven to be used for criminal purposes because it's anonymous, right? It
goes outside of all those things, doesn't it?
That's right. And there are many, many scams. You can see them where on, whether it be on X, on social media, where you can buy it. So you have to be very, very careful and purchase it or trade it through trusted sources, through a trusted broker, or there are apps that you can use that are run by public corporations. The most popular one here in the United States is called Coinbase, and that is regulated. That particular company is, but it trades cryptocurrency. So you do have to be very weary as you're stepping into it.
Well, then. And now, if in a fictional sense, if the George the Third coin that has been passed down from generations gets lost, say, would the next generation of the Liberty Unit hand on a cryptocurrency thing that gets on for generations.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. I'd have to think about that one. I like the thread that you're pulling on.
Well, it's a sort of the world, because in my generation before that, when somebody was born, say, you lay down a case of port for them. That was one of the things you did for the baby. And then when they were 21, they would break it open and celebrate or something. And I don't, you know, a few people, but that's less and less. So there are these different things in our culture that become something. And this cryptocurrency or tech is now our lives, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's changing at a pace one could argue is faster than any throughout history when you weave in the concept of artificial intelligence or AI. It is moving. If you combine that with cryptocurrency, combine that with robots, whether it be a physical robot or a software robot, self-driving cars, technology is moving at a breakneck pace.
I want to come back to the Liberty Unit in the modern day in a moment, but I now want to talk about your expertise, because you've just mentioned a whole raft of elements that is this tech part of our lives. And most of us, like myself, I wouldn't know how to buy a cryptocurrency, and I wouldn't know what to do if I had a ransomware. If any of our audience has had a ransomware attack or own cryptocurrency, just let us know. Or if you want to, go to George, because he knows how it's done. But what is your background? How do you know so much about all this?
Sure. So I've since graduating from university, I've been in technology. I started as a software developer, a programmer, and then worked my way up through the years getting involved with mobile technology, cellular phones. I was with a familiar company that you should be familiar with, Vodafone.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
In cellular technology. And then I became what's called a chief information officer. And that is, within a corporation, the senior technology person responsible for all of the technology that powers that company and secures, is responsible for securing the data that company stores. So I was responsible for designing and building data centers with hundreds, if not thousands, of servers, storage, networking. So that's been my background, technology. And now I have a company called Aperture XI Technologies that builds software robots. So we build software, not physical robots, but robots that perform human tasks, in tasks specifically that are repetitive, where people just are unhappy with what they're doing. So the robot can do it in a way that is typically better to allow the human to and the person, the worker, to go on and do tasks that they enjoy doing.
And you brought all this together, this expertise, in order to write Going Dark, drawing the historical things. We've had a couple of, before I ask the next questions on yes, my list to you, we've got a couple of things in on the cryptocurrency. Josie Morgan, is cryptocurrency affected by world economy fluctuating? Did it go down and up with the markets the other day?
It sure does. It's a very good question. It's just like any other currency or any other value-based exchange. So if there is higher demand, the price will go up, and less demand, the price will go down. So typically when it'll follow other types of currencies and other intrinsic value-based investments similar to gold or silver.
I was going to show you mentioned gold, because gold remains the sort of go-to thing in crises, right? Doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Will crypto overtake that? And my grandchildren will say, okay, we're going to buy Bitcoin now because the world's going upside down.
Time will tell. There are people that are experts in that question. I can't say, but it's I think there were more skeptics 5 years ago or 7 years ago that about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and now it's part of a mainstream investing, or at least approaching mainstream investing.
Yeah, which brings me to a question from Vivian. Traditional currencies tend to be backed by governments who collect taxes. Do you think that eventually some cryptocurrencies will be backed by various countries, much like coinage, dollars, pounds, euros?
Yeah, there's absolutely, and again, I'm not an expert in that aspect of cryptocurrency, but I can definitely share that governments are trying to get involved in the exchange and regulation of cryptocurrency. And they're pushing very hard to do that. Mainly, taxation is one reason, but also having visibility into how cryptocurrency is used and to ensure that it's not used for illicit purposes. But that is why the public is gravitating towards cryptocurrency, because it is anonymous and because the government is not involved. So if the government gets involved, that could then... It's a decentralized, anonymous, value-based exchange. Governments are not involved.
So is this a bit like an era when people were moving away from trading in gold and silver and they started getting banknotes? And people were saying, well, I don't want this banknote. I want a piece of real gold because I don't trust the banknote.
Yeah, the challenge with cryptocurrencies, it fluctuates so dramatically. So you may, if you were to invest in Bitcoin today, I don't know what the price is. Let's just say it's $65,000 to buy one Bitcoin. And by the way, you can buy fractions of a Bitcoin.
I hope so.
So you can buy $100 worth, which would be a fraction of that or $65,000. But then tomorrow, that $100 worth of Bitcoin could be worth $5 because something happened in the economy. It is much more volatile than any other value-based currency, where the dollar, the pound is relatively stable, right? And it's backed by governments, where cryptocurrency is not. So it is, that volatility then leads to significant risk. So be very careful.
Don't put all your eggs into it.
That's right.
The advice from Cleveland, Ohio is don't put all your eggs in it, but you can have
it. No, diversify.
Diversify. I want to be in the 21st century. We have a fictional situation of Islamic cyber attacks.
That's right.
On the United States. We have just had a presidential inauguration, whereby the cyber people, the oligarchs of tech, have all gathered around the new president, which is, so we've got a sort of culture coming at it. What do you read into that, George, as where we're going with all of this?
It's an interesting dynamic, because many of the people that you're talking about, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, to name a couple, traditionally, they were Democrats, so they were on the opposite political party as Donald Trump and the Republicans. However, over the last several years, what's happened is that the administration, the Biden Democrat administration, has instituted policies that affected those technology companies in their ability to create an open exchange of information, specifically social media. And the government started getting involved and regulating and influencing what these large companies, Facebook, Twitter, what they can and cannot post. Therefore, those executive felt that they were impeding on their ability to create a company in a free market. So they said, if the government's going to get involved, I cannot back it. And the Biden administration led by Elon Musk advocated that free speech, which is our First Amendment, which it's the foundation of the American Constitution and the way we live, the ability to speak out against your government without fear of ramifications. And then the Second Amendment is the right to bear arms. And that was created to protect the First Amendment. So those are the two. So the long story short is Elon Musk led the fight against the government, which was impeding on free speech and telling Twitter and Facebook and all the others what they could and could not say. For example, about the coronavirus and about vaccines, that they were trying to impede on what Americans can say and what they can't say. So they then, those executives, those founders of these giant tech companies gravitated to Trump, and Trump, he was advocating for free speech and American voices. So that's how it really happened.
Okay, so that is why they're sort of gravitating around him, with Elon Musk sort of at the top there, because he's the richest man in the world and owns Twitter or X, as it were.
Well, he also believes, and this is very important, he's a student of history, and he believes that regulation and laws at a certain point bring down a modern society. That means there's so much regulation, there are so many laws that constrain free markets that it impedes progress. And he launches rockets, right? So SpaceX, he launches rockets. Well, the government imposes tight regulations on what it takes to launch a rocket. And he thinks it's his opinion that those regulations are too restrictive, and it's going to slow his ability to create a society off planet on Mars. So, and Trump, the Trump administration and conservative Republicans believe in less government, less regulations. And therefore that was another reason. So free speech regulation is another reason why they migrated to Trump.
And the voters voted, it was almost a landslide for what you're just saying, I think, and also that thing. We find that very difficult to understand over here. And the argument that you just said about the less regulation, but there's also regulation on what television channels can say about libeling people, about saying incorrect things and that. And these platforms now merge, don't they? So is this American administration say take away all regulation from all of the press?
No. Free speech doesn't mean, and it's not meant by the founders to impact or affect others negatively. So Congress created laws to ensure that libel, for example, or hate speech are prevented. So these platforms are still required to follow law.
Yeah.
Those will not.
That's staying.
And they've all said, Trump, yeah. Musk, yeah. Zuckerberg, our platforms will follow the law. However, the government overstepped, and that's how they. So the laws will still protect free speech, but protect people from hate speech, from those types of things.
Okay. And may I ask, did you vote for Biden or did you vote for Trump?
I am an advocate for national security,
mm-hmm.
for less regulation,
mm-hmm.
for education for our children, and Trump. And the Conservative Party, Republicans, follow that mantra. So I did vote for Trump.
You voted. And tell me, because I've just said that we in Europe see, don't really understand a lot of things going. How does America see Europe or see us in Britain when it comes to our healthcare and our no guns and all of that sort of thing?
How do they see? I mean, I don't know that I can speak for, obviously I can't speak for Americans.
You speak for yourself.
From my perspective, and I was just there about, I met with you for lunch, yeah. Right? About yeah. 6 months ago in London. And first of all, I think there's a deep affection for the country because of our heritage, because we've been allies through multiple wars.
Including the Independence War that you wrote about.
That's right. There are a few wars. 1812 is another one. So where the British burned down the White House.
Yeah. That's right.
I digress. I see parallels in what's happening to the United States, and that is open borders affect the security of its citizens, and we see it through fentanyl from gangs infiltrating our cities. I'm sure that's happening in London to a certain degree because of the mass migrations, because of the wars in the Middle East. So obviously the political parties are shifting from one side to another. You saw that in Canada, right? The prime minister had to resign just in the last month. I think Americans see what's happening in the UK and in Europe and can feel it because the similar issues are happening here in the United States.
Yeah. We've got a couple of good, Vivian, thank you, Vivian. There's a great difference, says Vivian, between defending free speech and unrestrained disinformation. Don't like the flood of opinion coming from the new government now. I think you're talking about the Trump administration. We also have a fairly new government here, which is on the other side of that old political left-right spectrum. I think that's probably gone now. Josie Morgan, thank you. There are so many unhinged people around regulation essentially for the protection of the majority. What do you think about that? Anybody can get on and say, yes, the Trump flood, says Vivian. Anybody can get on to X or Facebook and start saying what a dreadful man George Mihok is. He should be hung, drawn, and quartered.
That's the beauty of
that's free speech. With you, is it? Yeah.
But you cannot threaten the life of a president. That is a law. So if you threaten the life of a president, you can be subject to arrest.
And and if I threatened your life,
That would be hate speech, and that would be against the law as well.
Yeah. So there are laws
in place to protect us. Yeah. But you know, who the question around disinformation, in my opinion, is who gets to define what is accurate information versus disinformation, and laws are meant to try to define that, not bureaucratic government appointees, but laws are meant to do that. And then also the platforms are, Elon Musk on X has implemented something over the last year that's very, I think it's trying to address that. It's called a community note. So if you post something about an event and it's, anyone can reply in a community note and dispute it or add more information so that you can go into that note and it's the community monitoring itself, which I think is very interesting.
Okay. I just have a quick thing to that is the culture that we have at the moment, the community note prompted this thinking in the way we all interact right now, compared to your 18th century. I mean, you know, you're in the middle of a revolution, but there were cultures there, weren't there? How would you say the human mindset has changed?
How has the human mindset changed? I did quite a bit of research into the revolutionary period, the founding fathers. I've read the biographies of all of them and many of the presidents in the times. To a certain degree, it's very similar, very similar. People want to live free. They want to care for their families. They want their children to have a better life than they had. They want their children to be educated, right? They want to avoid wars, right? And they just want to live their life. So back then, there was a king who basically ruled that he could tax the people without the people having a say in how those funds were allocated or whether they could be taxed. So it's very similar to today, where the people would like to have a say. And if they don't have a say, then they're going to rise up. And you could argue that this latest election was a message being sent to the government and to the other party that the people are tired of the government being involved in their lives. That's one perspective,
but
it's very similar.
And tax, of course, the taxation without representation, which was in the tax, of course, is a sort of DNA in the lifeblood of the American citizen, isn't it? Whereas here it's sort of a little bit more nebulous. But I just wanted to move on. Goodness, this hour has gone too quickly for me. Angel investing.
Yes.
Because we're talking about tech and all of these companies, Vodafone you mentioned and that sort of thing, they needed an angel investor at the beginning. They needed somebody to recognize the caliber of the people and the caliber of what they're trying to do and to put in a little bit of seed money. Is that what you do?
Yes, it's one aspect of what I do, absolutely, is to support other founders of companies. Early stage companies, you can call them startups, early stage, where they're raising funds. And the reason I enjoy doing it is that I get angel investors. Typically, there are some that like to be active and some that just like to invest for the potential, you know, outcome, the return on their investment. I like to get involved with the founders and also share my experiences, my background, and help them be successful. You know, as you get older, you know, one thing that I think about is how I can give back, and that's one way. You know, providing funds or, you know, resources in terms of an investment to an early stage company or founder is one way. Another way is to combine that investment also with advice and experience. And hopefully my advice helps.
Is there an example you can give us of something you spotted that maybe nobody else did that has now become something like Tesla?
I can't say that. I definitely can't say that. I've enjoyed getting involved with early stage companies. I feel pretty strongly about the healthcare system and doing what I can in a small way to help. So there are several in this area. We're in the Midwest of Ohio. We have a very strong hospital system here called the Cleveland Clinic. I think there's a version of it there in London or a branch in London. But there's a company that provides tracing of medical devices from this when a medical device is fabricated and created all the way through to when it's used in an operating room or implanted in a body, and it's actually tracked from end to end. So it's a way to ensure that the integrity of that medical equipment is intact. And it's using advanced technologies to do that. So that's one technology that is growing pretty quickly and important in the healthcare system.
And when you're looking for are you looking at the person there as to whether they can they've got the stamina to go the route, or are you looking at the product, or are you looking at nobody else has thought of this? What would your criteria
be? An excellent question. It's a combination of all of everything you just said, but it absolutely starts with the founder and the founder's passion, experience, ability to attract others, because you have to build a team. Yeah. And then the second thing, the idea has to be a big one. There has to be a market for it. It has to be a big idea. The last thing is, if there are many competitors and you're trying to launch a new product, you have to have something that's unique to allow you to compete in a very aggressive market.
It must be a sort of, you must be looking through hundreds before you pick even one,
it's actually easier than that. And especially for someone like myself, it's considered not a significant investor, nowhere even, close to some of the people you've talked about, like Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. You typically follow other investors, right? So I have friends, colleagues that I've known throughout the years that are investing in these companies. It's who you know. Do you know the founder? That's part of it. The second thing is you can join funds or venture funds,
right?
And contribute to them. And then they're managed by professional people who scour the market for those hundreds of companies to find that one that's going to grow.
That one nugget. I remember years ago when I was a correspondent in Hong Kong, this was before we had cell phones, one of the big Hong Kong Taipan types, Li Ka-shing, he had somebody who said, I want to buy this thing. And you just, you put this something on a phone box, and if you're within 20 yards of it, you can actually talk to people. Mm-hmm. And this was the beginning of the cell phone. Li Ka-shing said, "No, who on earth is going to do that?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to do it anyway because it's going to work." And it didn't work to begin with. And I think the guy got fired. And that actually became Vodafone. It went to Orange and it went to Hutchie, I think, and then it became Vodafone. So so that was and that was the time that nobody thought that that phones work. And I remember not that many years ago, people saying, "Why do I need an email when I can use a fax?"
That's right. That's right. Sometimes the ideas are too early, so you have to be careful.
So before I go to our promotions, George, I want to go back to Going Dark. I'm going to call it Going Light for the purpose of this question. Back then in the 1790s, what was the technology, the new thing that was being formed that has become something? And now, what do you think it is that it will be?
What is the technology? Well, I already touched on encryption. That was an important technology. In the late 1700s, war was driving many things. The French Revolutionary War came right after that. The War of 1812. I would say naval warfare. Okay. Was advancing very rapidly, going from and it moved from sails to wind power, steam, to now we have nuclear aircraft carriers.
So all of that was developing under war, because war makes people invent things.
Absolutely. A war is what you need to invent is you need resources, you need investment, so the government invests. And so now you're seeing drone-based naval warfare. Yeah. So your naval drone submarines. There are not people on those submarines or the fast-moving attack boats. They're driven by computers and artificial intelligence.
And then you were talking about that quantum computing race that's going on at the moment.
That's right, quantum computing race that is going to unlock encryption and throw America into the next version of darkness.
And then would I be right in thinking that also the founding fathers that you're writing there in Going Dark, they were formulating what they thought would be the basis of a new society. They went on to write the Constitution and all the amendments that we just talked about. that then became the sort of lead democracy element for the world, didn't it? So that was it's not a technology as such, but it's a sort of putting it all together, isn't it? Is where they were going with it.
Yeah, the brilliance of those men and
the patience.
Granted, they were not perfect, right? If you think of slavery and you think of other issues, but what's important is that it evolves. You have that original constitution evolved with amendments, and slavery was ended, obviously. So it's a living document and it's a living set of laws, which is, I think, the real brilliance of how they developed it without a king, without, you know, it is a document that can live on through generations.
Still looking. If anybody amongst us here finds themselves in Philadelphia, I thoroughly recommend a couple of hours at the Constitution Museum, I think it's called, or Hall, because that is really revelating. Sit there, George, for the moment. I'm going to tell our wonderful audience what is coming up. February the 11th, that is a week from now. Nick Nugent has written a book called The Spice Ports. And that's going to give us a vivid history of global trade and how the famous ports, you know, Venice, Amsterdam, Hong Kong, they were built because people wanted their food to taste better. That was trade. I'm going to ask about that in a second, Josh. February 18th, Lucinda is back from her Caribbean cruise with Three Dads Walking. That is an incredible story of three men bound by the death of their daughters. They went on a 300-mile journey across Britain to rebuild their lives one step at a time. I'm not sure which dad Lucinda is talking to, because I say she's gone dark in the Caribbean at the moment. And February the 25th, Lucinda's book club, Hotel du Lac by Anita Bruckner, requested by several Goals to members. Fantastic book. And March the 4th, I am with Mary Ann Seagart, author of The Authority Gap, Why Women Are Still Taken Less Seriously Than Men, and What Can We Do About It. Ever been talked over by a man? Except me, that is. What to do about it? Join us then. Hey, George, we're talking about the thing about those spice ports and the tariffs that have just come in. And these spice ports would have been sort of starting up around the time that Going Dark begins. Were there tariffs, such things as tariffs then, or not?
Tariffs, primarily taxes that were, and during the spice port trade, I can't actually tell you whether or not there were, not an area of my expertise.
Yeah, there would have been taxes, I think, you know, when you stop at a port, if it's a bit of bribery and everything. I wanted to take you talked about paying back earlier on, a quote that you've got on your website, and it says, you've got it, I think. Your mind expands. Yeah. Read it to us. Yeah.
Sure. Before I read it, it's about paying forward, right? So we're very fortunate. So let me, including myself. So your mind expands when you give. Your heart expands when you share. And your soul expands when you are charitable.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. And we've had a few people on the street, including neurologists and people like that, who say that there's something that happens in your brain when you are charitable, even if you give somebody on the street a dollar or something, it does something up here.
That's right. I think it's important.
Yeah, it is important. We have a couple of things. War develops medicines too, says Vivian. Yes, absolutely. Susan Hilton, Rial Dahl created a medical shunt to drain fluid that is still in use today. That's for hydrocephalus, I think, Suzanne Hilton, where you have too much fluid on your brain. Josie, thank you very much. Very informative. Others coming in through that. But we are out of time. Time's Wing Chariot. What a great conversation we've had from across the pond. As they say, going dark or going light, as I've changed the title to, but I put it in the chat there, how to get it on Amazon in the UK. A brilliant book. Until next time, with Nick Nugent and the Spice Ports, be curious, be kind, expand your heart. Watch out for crazy tech and historical comparisons. Socialize, exercise, and of course, stay Goldster. and help Goalster expand. Tell everybody about our podcasts. Just Google Goalster Podcast and an array of fascinating conversations will unfold before you. And George, you will be up there in a couple of weeks. And thank you so much for such a brilliant show.
Thank you, Humphrey. I enjoyed it very much.
It's brilliant. Thanks, everybody. And bye-bye. You've been listening to a Goalster Magazine Show podcast. Check us out on www.goalster.co.uk. We hope to tempt you, your family, and friends into the exciting world of helping everyone live healthier and happier for longer. Find more podcasts just by Googling Goalster and podcast. I'm Humphrey Hawksley, and hope you're with us again soon.